Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events this very fine Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. Our call-in number today is 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. If you'd like to give us a call for a question or a comment on the topics that we're discussing today. And, of course, we will be talking about gold, and we'll also be talking about perhaps a global depression. We might be talking about Japanese, the third largest national economy, their GDP and exports. Lots of things to talk about. Let's get started right away. Gold pricing today actually had a little bit of a pullback, which is expected, down $6.20 today. At $13.24, you have silver managed to be up today, up 13 at $22.07. Nice to see it over 22. Platinum was down 4 at $14.26, and palladium was down 6 at $738. The USDX is struggling to stay above 80.01. It did break down a little bit earlier in the day. It was 79. And some change, currently down 0.12 at 80.01. Crude oil. Something's pushing crude oil. I don't think it's the heating oil. I don't think it's the bad weather. But, of course, that's pretty much what they all blame. But I find it fascinating. It's up to 2.45 at 102.75. Gasoline prices will be rising pretty quickly. The paper markets today, you had the Dow. Let's see where we have the Dow. Somewhere in the Dow, they changed my screen on me. Why do they do that? People just can't leave well enough alone. The Dow. It ain't broke. Don't fix it. 0.23 down. Down 23 points at 16,130. The NASDAQ was up 28 points at 42.72. The S&P was up 2 at 18.40. And not sure I can bring up the 10-year yield, 2.71, down 0.04. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Melody, gold's down a little bit today. Not bad. It's been up significantly for the past 6-7 weeks. So you know, times are interesting. And you know, I don't feel comfortable seeing the price of gold jump $10-$15 a day. For me, that's an invitation to a certain amount of trouble. If it were up to me, I'd see gold just go up $2-$3 a day. $15 a week, $750 a year. Nothing too extraordinary, nothing too exciting. Just watch it go up, you know, and that would suit me just fine. When it starts jumping $10 or $15 a day, it makes me a little bit nervous. And I don't doubt that we're going to see more of that. It's more likely to go in the direction of $10 or $15 a day than it is, I suspect, than it is to stay down around $3 a day. But just the same, you know, it's going to be exciting to watch it jump, but it's more comforting to just see slow and steady.
Well, certainly when you see it jump like that, it's an indicator that something is about to unfold. You have people fleeing to gold for the safety of it, for the safe haven. Also in relationship to that is the price of oil rising as significantly as it has in the past couple of weeks and mainly these last few days. So, you know, that is a concern. And you know, we talked last week about, you know, the Iranian warships coming to the shores. Kiev, I mean, today they're just it's just complete chaos over there. And you have the fight between Europe and Russia over there. Politicians want to trade agreements with Russia, and the people want the trade agreements with Europe. And they were, you know, supposedly a peaceful demonstration, and troops moved in and set their camps, tents, on fire. Last report that I heard was like 9 folks perished in those fires. So don't have all the details, but that certainly is...
It's indication. It's just another one of these hot spots in the world right now. We don't have incredible violence taking place in Egypt at this point in time, but you can expect we're going to. They have a kind of temporary stability with the military imposing order for the moment. But we'll see how long that can last. Just because they have so many fundamental problems, they aren't easily overcome. And the people will ultimately blame their government if they can't get enough to eat. The prices go too high and to rise too high. And then they'll march. And then the government is going to call out the military, and they're going to say, we've got to stop this to maintain order and confidence in the government, and we've got to shoot some of these people. That's the way it always works out. And then the people get super angry because the government is shooting at them, and then things just degenerate and it goes down, and it's a predictable, it's, you could say it was a comedy of errors, you could say it was what fools these mortals be, but it's more than that. Once you get into these circumstances that are really difficult, we seem to have a, you know, practically a death wish that's built into the species, where one stupidity begets another stupidity, which begets violence, which begets more violence, which begets murder, which begets chaos, and no one seems to know how to deal with these problems in a way that calms people and satisfies them. There should be a way to sit down and say, look, we have a problem. And the reason is this, that, or the other, and outline those reasons honestly. So here's what the problem is. This is what has to be done. And cooler heads will sit back, and after a moment they'll say, you know, I think they're right. I think that is what has to be done. It doesn't happen. Why do you think it doesn't happen, Melody?
What's your answer, Al?
Special interests. The government is a bought and paid for in most of the world by rich folk. And they work to serve the rich, and the rich work to exploit the poor and the middle class. And based on that, and I don't have any problem with rich people who've made all the money, you can earn all the money you want. I'm not coming at this from a communist perspective. All right. I am not champion of the progressives or the liberal left or whatever. But if you are bribing the government to pass laws that allow you to make higher profits, pay lower taxes, be subject to less regulation than other people, you are bribing the government to rob the public. And that's what much of the wealthy do in this world today. And the governments are for sale, and the people don't seem to get it, understand it. But as long as the governments are for sale, the governments are going to try to represent the best interests of the oligarchy rather than the best interests of the average of the middle class. And if they're going to do that, chaos is a-coming. And that's true, in my opinion, in Egypt, and it'll be true in Iraq and Syria and every place else you want to point to. Chaos is a-coming unless we can find some politicians who are more interested in doing what's right for the American people than they are to do what's profitable for major American corporations.
Well, that is true. I'm not sure that's exactly, or maybe it is exactly what's going on in Ukraine.
It's part of it. I don't think it's the only thing, but it's part of it. It's these vested interests that keep politicians from doing what's right.
And I think a lot of times you have even your special interests can also be other governments, too.
Got the money, we got the time. That's what it comes down to. It's one of those things. It's trying to find. We have a system. And I think, you know, it would not be surprising for me to try to link these problems that I'm talking about. Governments being bought and paid for by the rich, all right, by powerful special interests. It's not surprising that I would try to link that to fiat currency. It's my inclination to do so, but I don't have any evidence that I can point to, and I can't logically make that connection right now. But in my gut, I don't doubt that it's true. Ultimately, the governments are subservient to whoever is printing all that cash. And that's, they're subservient to whoever is printing it or whoever has access to it, where they can get a pile of it and say, here, I'm going to give some to my favorite local politician, and he'll make sure that we pass laws that are helping me rob more money from the people, of the Ukraine, of the United States, whatever. But to me, it's the same process. I can't prove it's tied up with fiat currency, but I really doubt that we could have the kinds of trouble that we have right now, financially and morally, if we were living in a world where we still had gold and silver coin as our money. I don't mean that gold and silver coin would wipe out all moral problems and eliminate all crime and murder and the rest of that. I don't mean that, but I mean it would be reduced if only because you can't spin the gold and silver out of thin air. There'd still be trouble. I get that. I understand that. But I don't believe there'd be as much. Now we're coming to problems. You know, Ukraine, people are starting to get shot. We'll be back to shooting people in Egypt before this is all over. Everyone listening to this program understands that our own government is stockpiling billions of rounds of ammunition in anticipation of what? And the apparent answer is in anticipation of a shooting revolution here in this country, where the government thinks it may be called on to shoot the American people. The government says, oh, it's for target practice or some other nonsense. But we're talking about, we're not talking about a couple million rounds. We're talking about several billion rounds of ammunition. It can't be a good thing. When the government thinks it has to arm itself to protect itself against the American people, when they anticipate that's going to be a problem, then you know we've got some serious trouble brewing. And even if it's not obvious and it's not apparent right this moment, as we look out the window and look out the doors, things seem to be okay. The government is at least signaling that they think things might not be okay in the foreseeable future. And what are they doing? Are they saying, listen, we need to explain things to the American people? No. Are they saying we need to persuade the American people? No. They are saying we don't think we can explain, we don't think we can persuade, therefore we're going to have to either give up being government and surrender to the will of the American people, or we are going to have to shoot them. And the government's apparent choice is, well, we may just have to shoot those people because they aren't giving us any money. The ones we won't shoot, the oligarchy. We won't shoot the rich. We won't shoot the ones that are bribing congressmen and senators and presidents. We won't shoot the ones that are advocating treason and global free trade and a bunch of other crap like that. We'll shoot the people who are watching, who are losing their homes and their families and their futures and watching the American dream disappear. We'll shoot them because there's no money coming in from those people.
Speaking of free trade, you have, Obama wants to put a major emerging trade deals with Europe and Asia on a fast track.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this is the Democrats, they're working to sidetrack that because of the elections. Mm-hmm. But you'll never know who his ally is. You have John Boehner.
Yeah.
He's pushing and wondering what's taken so long to get this these free trade agreements.
And who do those agreements serve?
And the Trans-Pacific Trade and Investment Partnerships, which is a very, from my understanding of that TPT trade agreement, that's the dangerous one. And I can't cite the parts of it that makes it so. But
what makes it so is that it favors multinational corporations.
It's more than that, Al. And it does create the largest free trade zone in the world. Roughly covering half of all global trade, but there's things in there other than dealing with other things other than just trade and who it helps, so to speak.
Well, my concern with it is this. They say this is going to be free trade. What that means is American labor will increasingly have to compete with Chinese labor. And that means American labor, the price of American labor is going to go down. And it means American laborers will be less able to buy homes and cars. Their standard of living will go down. And we are going to merely share the American market with a bunch of foreigners and say, come on in, sell all your stuff dirt cheap in this country, and we don't care if the middle class disappears because they can't find a decent job. We won't produce our own TVs, our own television, our own computers, and our own automobiles. We'll buy them all from you because they're cheap. And in the meantime, though, we destroy our own productive capacity. And we may think we're saving something because we're getting our TVs and our flat screen monitors, computer monitors, at dirt cheap prices from China. And we think, hey, this is such a deal. Yeah, it is. It is. It's an irresistible deal for most of us. But we are losing our productive capacity, and we're buying these items to a significant degree with credit. Not with productivity, but with credit. And what happens when we are finally exhausted and we have no more savings and we have no more credit? Then what? Then we won't buy anything from foreign countries, point one. And we won't manufacture anything in this country. Now, I'm exaggerating, but I'm doing it to make the point. This is not in our best interest. These global free trade agreements are in the best interests of multinational corporations who can build products in countries where labor is dirt cheap and sell products in countries where people still have some semblance of money left over. And when the money's all gone, then where are they going to sell it? The whole thing is stupid, self-destructive, suicidal. It's abominable, but it seems to continue. We are going to stop, however, at least for a moment, take a couple commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to tell the listeners, for all your gold and silver, we got great prices, great shipping. Our service is excellent. No complaints. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We join forces with Wendy Wilson from the Apothecary Herbs, and she does the health section, and of course we produce the wealth section. Alfred puts an article in there, and Lori Roth has an article in there, and we also give just a little bit of information. It's not 80 pages long, but sometimes you don't need 80 pages. Just a few will work. So the last thing I want to bring up, last week we were finishing up on shares, and I just wanted to make one comment, Al, and if you'd like to
interrupt.
Yes. No.
Can't interrupt. Okay, I won't interrupt then.
The biggest mistake I hear when I have my clients talk to me about buying shares versus gold and silver coins is when they buy shares, they think they own gold. Just because it's a mining share and they mine gold or silver, they think they own gold. And they don't. And sometimes these mining shares, and they believe that the mining shares are immune to market fluctuations. They think just if gold goes up, the miners will go up. If the stock market goes down, the miners will go up. They don't work in the same manner in which holding physical gold. So you just have to be very careful when you're buying. And I think shares, if you want to speculate, is okay. However, don't be underinsured with your physical gold. You know, if someone tells you just to put 5% of your money into physical gold and put the rest in paper, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You may as well don't bother. And if these promises of miners going through the roof, you got to think about what will be happening at that time. If you do believe the miners are going to take off and gold prices are going to take off, I mean, what do you think will be happening in this country when we have 3,000 spot gold or higher? Will you even be able to get your money out of the markets? I mean, there's a lot of questions. So just by owning gold shares, don't believe you're safe. There's still the element of risk. Yes, your return can be greater. You can have more leverage with the miners. But don't ever believe you think you own physical gold or that you have gold in your portfolio.
Well, one other thing about it is when people buy mining shares, what are they interested in?
Profit.
That's exactly right. And the profit is measured in what?
Fiat dollars.
That's exactly right. And they've got a different mentality and a different system of values than we do on this program.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting back and saying, look, the ideal, the best you can do, not a perfect solution, doesn't mean you'll live forever or the hair will grow over the bald spot on the back of your head or the rest of that thing. But gold is the best deal going out there. Now, if you want to go into mining shares, yes, you can go into mining shares. And if you choose the right ones, you can probably make a significant profit. And you may do very well. I understand that. But you will make that profit in terms of paper dollars. You're not going to make that profit in terms of gold and silver. And we sit here looking at circumstances, and we sit back and say, what's going to happen a year from now or 6 months from now or whatever? How probable is it that we may see some sort of a significant economic decline? And what happens in that context? What's the possibility that paper dollars are going to become more devalued by inflation and perhaps suddenly less valuable? It's because we are inclined to think those scenarios are at least possible. We sit back and say the best protection is gold and silver. Now, if you want to get the gold, you want to get the gold mining shares, the silver mining shares, yeah, you got a good chance at making a profit, but it will be a paper profit. You understand that? Unless you find a time where you can turn, you can sell your gold shares and you can buy gold if you want to do that. I mean, if you can time it properly. But we look at it from, you know, a more prudent perspective. We are perhaps not as optimistic as those people who are buying gold and silver mining shares. They may think, oh, it's all going to hold together. We're all going to get rich. Well, maybe we do. And I hope they're right. But our perspective is a little bit more wary. We are inclined to stay a little further away from risk, and therefore we tend to stay away from paper. We think all paper is inherently risky and more risky than gold and silver. But with that risk, there may actually be an additional profit. It's just a question, how well can you time it? And if you know when to get in and you know when to get out, you're good. And if you know when to get in and you don't know when to get out, you're perhaps going to lose your buns. And we're going to be still sitting on our, you know, our gold coins. We've got a caller. Who is it? Joe from Arkansas. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am here, Al.
Hello, Joe. What you got for us?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, I wanted to give my definition of President's Day, which we had yesterday. And my definition of President's Day is the day when all the people in private business have to work and pay taxes so that the bankers and the government people can enjoy a nice holiday. And then I also wanted to say something about free trade. And that's, I've been kind of got a couple of examples recently of how free trade is, you know, importation of, you know, free importation and everything is really not good for a country's economy. I've been reading a book called The Spider's Web, and it talks about how in the 1980s, I think it was, the United States government put sanctions on the importations of weapons by the government of Chile. They wanted to hurt the government of Chile. And as a result of that, the Chileans apparently developed quite an arms industry of their own and became, you know, quite expert manufacturers of many weapons and so on like that. And they were forced to because they weren't allowed to import them. So it seemed like that, you know, turned out to be something of a good thing for Chile,
well,
at least for certain people.
But the lesson is because free trade was not functioning, the people of Chile had to become independent, and they had to learn how to produce their own firearms, which is a good thing for any nation. I'm arguing that we are better off producing our own TV sets and our own computers and our own automobiles than we are buying them cheap from foreign countries. In the end, we have to have some sort of a balance between our consumption and our productivity. And when we allow the foreigners to trade in this country at cheap prices, we're destroying our productive capacity, destroying our independence, and we're working exactly contrary to the example you just pointed out in Chile. They closed down. They said, we're not going to sell you any guns. Chile said, fine, we'll make our own. Chile's better off for it.
Yep.
You know, and if
another
we do the same thing, we'd be better off. Go ahead.
Another example I heard recently was on the John Batchelor Show. That's a show that comes on the local radio station here at on Saturday night. And anyway, they were talking about the silk industry in America. There was somebody had written a book about some man named Skinner that was in the silk business in America in the 19th century. And they said that American silk, you know, was just a very, very small industry, and people didn't want to buy American silk and so on like that. It was quite insignificant. Until after the Civil War, the author said, the American government put a 60% tariff on imported silk. And that caused the American silk industry to absolutely flourish. And so it became a big industry employing thousands in America for a while. I don't know if it's going on or not, probably not. But that's another example of how tariffs built up the industry of America. And I recently called my senators and representative, you know, to try to get them to vote against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I got my senator, John Bozeman, sent me a letter recently, and, you know, you could tell that he wanted to vote for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but he was, you know, very carefully wording things to make it sound like maybe he was open-minded and he would look into it and all its aspects and, you know, make sure that it was a good deal and all this kind of stuff. And then he put in there, you know, platitudes about how trade creates jobs and so on like that. But it looks like there is so much, you know, but you could tell that he wants to vote for it, and I think all the Republicans want to vote for it. They're being paid by Walmart and other people to do it, I'm sure. But the fact that he worded his letter so carefully to try to make it sound like maybe he was, you know, not completely in favor of it, you know, it made it sound to me like probably there's so much popular opposition to it that, you know, that it has at least slowed it down, and so I hope people just keep up the opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because maybe we can stop this thing. Who knows?
There is no way that we can, I won't say there's no way, but there's very little reason to believe that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to do the middle class of this country any good. It'll do the super rich a lot of good, and the rest of the country will suffer a loss. Excuse me. Will suffer a loss almost certainly. You made the point that tariffs, which restrict trade, build industries. Your local industry. They raised the tariff on silk goods, and the American silk industry flourished. All right. As a general rule, higher tariffs will do that. If you want something, you're going to have to either build it yourself or buy it from your neighbor, because you can't buy it from a foreign country. It teaches us to be a productive, industrious, and so on. Now, what does free trade do? Tariffs cause us to become more independent and more productive. Free trade, on the other hand, what does that build? It builds profits for the elite, and it builds welfare for the rest of the country. I'm going to make you a bet that if we had the right statistics, gathered the right statistics, and compared the onset of global free trade with the amount of people receiving food stamps in this country, you'd see a pretty direct correlation. You follow what I'm saying, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. And I think... And one book that I've mentioned a couple of other times, I believe, is Unforgiven, the Story of How America Exchanged Parity Agriculture for Parity War by Charles Walters Jr. That's the best economics book I've ever read. And this book actually makes the point, you know, the man that wrote it, you know, studied the statistics, studied the records of the American economy, and found that actually tariffs do not restrict trade, they increase trade because they keep the earnings of the working people up. They keep wages up. And therefore, the working people making wages buy not only more domestically produced stuff, but also more imported stuff. Whereas what global free trade does, you know, it creates a bigger market area, you know, but it curtails trade overall. It makes the whole world economy depressed because, you know, the big companies then can buy raw materials wherever they're produced the cheapest, wherever they pay the lowest wages for producing raw materials. They can produce stuff in the places where the factory wages are the lowest, wherever they can hire the lowest paid labor, they can, produce stuff there. Then they can take it to whatever market, you know, that has the most money where people have some ability to buy the stuff. But as a result of buying this imported stuff, you know, the people in those countries lose their jobs and their wages go down. So global free trade ends up depressing the whole world economy because it lowers the earnings of the working people all over the world. It takes away from the purchasing power of the working people all over the world. So it ends up causing less trade altogether.
Well, I basically agree with you. The one thing you said when we move into this global free trade, it creates a bigger market area. And that's not precisely true in my mind. It's got an improper emphasis. What it does is it creates a bigger market for labor. It doesn't create a bigger market for products. It creates a bigger market for labor. And if I want TVs, if I want to buy a new television set, and I'm living in Dallas, Texas, where we have high tariffs, I'm going to be looking for somebody who manufactures television. That's perhaps right here in Dallas. Might be where I can get my best deal. That's going to be good for the people in my local community. Somebody's going to have a job making the TV set that I buy, and they will perhaps then hire me to do whatever services I can provide. When we increase global free trade, I want a TV set. The cheapest TV set's probably coming from China just because of the labor. But it necessarily means that my neighbor, the guy who makes televisions, he's out of business. He's going under welfare. What I'm trying to just get across is just a small point. What global free trade does is expand the labor base. And when it does, it necessarily means that the price of average price of labor has to go down. And that's just not, that's the end of the American dream. The American dream was that every year that each generation would live better than the previous generation. And that's certainly not happening right now. It did happen for all of our history up until about 1970 or thereabouts. And since then, the American dream has gone stagnant or perhaps even into reverse. Who believes the next generation will live as well as the current generation? Rich folk are going to do fine. The rest of you are going to pay a price. And the result will be when we are all impoverished, there's going to be a small oligarchy that runs the world who are super rich. And all the rest of us are going to be so hungry that we're going to do just anything we have to do just to put enough food on the table where we can get by till another day. It does not bode well. It just doesn't work for us. And if we keep this up, we're going to pay a price for global free trade. They say, oh, it's free. It's global free trade. It's a great idea. It's a bunch of crap. It's going to destroy this nation. And it's already doing that. We've got about 30 seconds left till we take a break. Joe, is there something else you'd like to add?
Well, I think there's a good moral argument. Besides the economic argument, I think there's a real good moral argument against free trade. And that's that, you know, the citizens of a country, citizens of America, for instance, you know, have a lot of responsibilities as citizens. You know, they got to pay taxes. They got to fight the wars of the country. They got to obey the laws. You know, they have a lot of responsibilities.
They've got to produce their own food and goods and one thing another. And, you know, it's not just a free ride. We have a balance here. You've got to produce at least as much as you intend to consume. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Take another break. Be back soon. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Sound. Okay, I'm not. The sound goes on, it goes off. This is the middle of the program, Frank. This isn't the beginning of the program. Any case, this is Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom.
On a final note to that Trans-Pacific Partnership, there is a meeting this weekend. Trade ministers from 12 countries are going to be meeting in Singapore. And hoping that they'll be able to finish the deal. Lee Hsien Loong, he said that he's the Singapore Prime Minister. He's hoping to complete it. And they're hoping that Obama will get the approval for fast track. And so.
Yeah, and what they're doing, what does fast track mean, as we were talking in the during the break? What does fast track mean? They make it sound like this is such an important law. We got to do it right now. We don't have time to think about this. We don't have time to talk about it, much like Obamacare. They didn't have time to think about it, talk about it, or even read it. And they voted for it, as Nancy Pelosi said, so you could find out what's in it. And surprise, surprise, it was a bucket of excrement. That's what was actually in it. This fast track will be the same thing, or fast track for the Pacific Trade Agreement will be much the same. Why do they want fast track? Because they don't want an opportunity for the American people to get wind of this thing and think about it and begin to realize that they are being sold out, betrayed by their own congressmen, their own senators, their own presidents. That's what's happening. And they don't want you people to put pressure on Washington and say, if you SOBs insist on betraying us with this, we are going to not only vote you out of office, we're going to see to it that there are trials for treason, and we're going to get some of you people hanged. Right? They don't want any of that. They want you people to believe that you have a government that's doing what's best for you. And it's not. The presumption is that if the money goes to the corporations and they get rich, well, then you'll get rich. Only it's not true, because the corporations are capable of hiring labor in China. You're not capable of buying products directly in China. You can't go to China. The multinational corporations can. They can produce products for a pittance and sell them for relatively high prices in this country. They can maximize their profits, and they will keep those profits for themselves. I guarantee. You know, one of the characteristics of wealthy people everywhere is that, by and large, they don't part with a nickel unless they have to. The trickle-down theory is a bunch of crapola. If they get the money, they're going to keep the money. The only way the money is going to trickle down to you is when they offer to buy your house for 25% of what you sold it or what you bought it for. And then they'll say, oh, the trickle down, it's going to you. The wealthy are spending money on the middle class and the poor. Isn't that wonderful? They're spending a fraction of a dollar of what the product they're buying is worth. And they're doing it because by means of global free trade, they will have impoverished this country. They will have diminished our standard of living and made all of us less wealthy and all of us, or virtually all of us, more susceptible to the wealth of the elite. It's a terrible situation, and it's not just something to, you know, to get to rant about. It needs to be stopped. And fast track is one of the ways where government says we can avoid it. We can avoid having it stopped. We can get this done before the great unwashed even knows what's going on. You know, one of the interesting things, not just interesting, but criminal characteristics of the Pacific Trade Agreement is that it's been done largely in secret, and they've done everything they can to prevent the details of the agreement from being released or publicized to the American people. It's not an accident. Why do you suppose if they were out to do you a good deed, if they were really out this Pacific Trade Agreement, it was really going to help Joe Sixpack, why is it that you suppose they are trying to keep this situation in secret, operate in secret in negotiating this agreement? They don't want the victims to know what's going to happen. They are acting in secret to put this Pacific Trade Agreement together for the same reason that the people who plan to rob the bank where you keep your money are also acting in secret. They don't publish their plans and say, guess what? On Saturday of May 15th, we plan to rob the First National Bank. The crooks don't do that. In order to make their robbery most effective and least risk to themselves, they've got to do it in secret. They've got to fast-track their robberies. That's what your government is going to do with the Pacific Trade Agreement. They're going to fast-track it. They're going to keep it in secret. And then when it's done, like Obamacare, then people, if it's, oh, gee, what can we do? The law's already been passed. Golly, there's nothing we can do. It's a betrayal. It's not just a misunderstanding. It's a knowledgeable and intentional betrayal by your own government. Your congressman, I don't care who he is, he's in on it. If he's not standing up and screaming and shouting that the Pacific Trade Agreement is bad for this country, if he's not screaming and shouting about that, he is betraying the vast majority of the American people, and he knows it. And he's just hoping he can get in under the wire, and when it's finally enacted, they may even pass this with a voice vote, where we can't even prove who voted for it and who voted against it. They know this is going to be trouble, and why are they doing it? Because they're making so much money on the side that they can't resist the temptation to betray the American people. You know, I've said it for years, and this isn't a new comment with me. This nation is being destroyed by its own government. And a lot of people say, oh, that's radical talk. You can't say that. That's crazy talk. The government. No, it's not. The founding fathers understood that the principal enemy of the American people was, all the way back in the 1700s, was then and would always be our own government. That's why we have the right to keep and bear arms. That's why we have the right of free speech. That's why we have the right of assembly and religion and a number of other rights that are protected in the Constitution. Why? Protected against whom? You can read the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and it's obvious. They say the purpose of the first 10 amendments, they don't specifically say 10 amendments, they submitted 13 amendments to the first 13 states and asked them if they how many did you want to add to the Constitution. And the states voted for 10 of them. Three were not adopted. All right. 10 were, those 10 became our Bill of Rights. The letter that they sent out, they said the purpose of these proposed amendments is to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. Who has powers under the Constitution? And the answer is your president, your senators, your congressmen, your federal judges, your federal employees. They have powers under the Constitution. I do not. I have some rights that are supposed to be protected. I don't have any powers under the Constitution because I don't work for the federal government. The powers go to the people who are in the federal government, and the Bill of Rights was intended to protect us from them. And that goes all the way back to 1789. This isn't a recent phenomenon. The reason we have checks and balances in the Constitution, the reason we have three departments of government that are supposed to be separate and not supposed to step on each other's toes, but are supposed to fight among each other in order to protect us from what? From government power. It is un-American. It's un-American to trust the government. The founding fathers drafted what was an imperfect constitution, and I'll give you that. There were some things that, in my opinion, I'm sure other people would agree, were not perfect. We might disagree what I think was imperfect and what someone else thinks are imperfect. There's some disagreement, but it was an imperfect document. It couldn't be perfect. There's just no way mankind is not going to generate a perfect document. Unless the good Lord comes down and writes it on stone, it isn't going to be perfect. But the idea behind it was they knew you can't trust the people in government. They will betray you. The founders understood it. And they designed that Constitution, checks and balances, freedom of speech, elections every 2 years, right to keep and bear arms, right of redress, petition for redress of grievances. Every bit of it was intended to protect us against the inevitable evil of government. It was one of those things they understand government is, can't think of the proper term. It's not inevitable evil, but it is a necessary evil. Right? Government works by force. Government is often unaccountable for whatever it does. That helps them. It encourages them to take advantage, to cut corners, to break the law. They insist that you and I have to obey the law, but they don't. The police can lie to you by law. They can lie to you, no problem. Cops can lie to you. But if you lie to the police, it's an offense that can get you thrown in the slammer. The government is no longer the servant. The government wants to be the master. And if you allow that to take place, if you trust them, you allow it to take place. If you trust them, I don't care if it's Obama or Bush or whoever, if you trust them, you are un-American. The Constitution distrusts the government. If being a good American means living in harmony with the spirit of the Constitution, then you don't trust the government. Doesn't mean you have to shoot people and bomb people and resort to violence, but you don't ever believe what they tell you. Well, we live in a world where I'm not sure if they care whether we believe or if they think they've got so much control it's not even necessary to control our beliefs anymore, but this isn't going to change until we stand up on our hind legs and make a change. We've got a caller. Jim is here from Pennsylvania. Jim, are you online?
Yes, I am, Al. Hi, Al. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Jim.
And, something you said earlier about how these free trade agreements, they just benefit the multi-level corporations, and that brought back a couple of experiences I had. I was doing a lot of safaris in Africa back in over 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago, a little bit longer, and I had contacts in Zimbabwe, South Africa, other countries. Anytime I tried to get a business deal going, we got racked with tariffs and duties. But if I was a multinational corporation, that would have been waived. And I'm a healthcare professional for over 30 years, a doctor in this country. And anyway, it was just impossible. And that's even with connections internally in those countries over 20 years ago with people that know, new people in the government. There was just no way to crack the nut. So it was across the pond, too. These countries work hand in hand with these multinational corporations to put the screws to the little guy. So I just had to emphasize and reinforce what you said earlier, Al.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the evidence is there, and it's a good thing that folks like you call in just to support and verify and say, no, this is right. This is just, it's not just right, it's common sense. You can see it. And it's especially obvious when they try to negotiate this Pacific trade agreement in secret. Why don't they want the American people to know what's going on? And the answer is because they're going to betray the best interests of the American people. They're concerned
they
that if the great unwashed find out what's going on, they'll try to stop it. They might even succeed.
And they don't want us to benefit, us citizens,
no.
individually,
no,
to
no,
benefit
no, no.
from it.
We are more easily controlled when we are impoverished. When we get to a point where we can barely feed ourselves, we become a lot easier to control and dominate by anyone who can actually deliver a bowl of potage. So
yes,
poverty, if you're rich and you want to rule, best thing to do is make sure that the vast majority of the people are impoverished, and they'll follow you anywhere. If you promise one chicken in one pot for the whole village, we can give you a chicken. And the village says, yay, we got a chicken. You know, it's all insane.
You know, I fed a lot of villages on safari, and I was in competition with the witch doctor because my fees were free. But all I could say is that I did more, I think, than a safari. It's do more than the whole UN put together as far as feeding Africa and employing Africa on top of it all. So, well, thanks for your program.
Thanks very much, Jim. We
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your call.
Appreciate it, Jim.
Ciao.
All right, folks. Melody, we've got about 30 seconds left. Anything you would like to add, subtract?
No, I don't think.
Multiply, divide?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Ross Perot mm-hmm. said it perfectly so many years ago. You know, they passed NAFTA, and all you're going to hear is this huge sucking sound, and that's jobs leaving this country. And
yeah, but the thing he was wrong about, we didn't hear the sound. The jobs left, but they left silently, and we didn't notice, and now we're in big trouble.
Oh,
I'm Alfred Addis. We're right here on Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and we're out of time. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.